Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Super Deluxe Gamescast. It is Thursday, August the 10th, 1 week into being 43 years old.
It's been
a week.
Thank you, Jeff, for getting it in two words.
I'm not comfortable enough to carry the tune, but
no, me neither, but I can do the first two words.
I hope everybody's doing okay today. The only shirt I had that's clean was this tank top. So if you're in chat, a little extra shouldery treat for everyone. If you're listening on podcast services, you're missing out.
You're really missing out on some prime Boston butt on display.
Yeah. What can I say? I'm a big, beautiful, sexy, hairy man. So what can I say? Anyway, Derek, but you know what, Derek, you are also a big, beautiful, sexy, hairy man as well.
I'm not a very big person, John. I'm actually on the short side.
Derek, but you got a big heart though.
That's true.
You got a big heart. And Jeff, what can I say about Jeff that hasn't been said already? What are you drinking there?
Just beer. Just local craft beer.
What is the brewery? What is the brand we're talking about?
It's Alley Cat Orange Alley. Beer.
Yeah, I've never heard of that shit.
But it's local. Like most of the beers that I so they're brewed. We got a big brewery scene.
What are you drinking, John?
I am drinking a Founder's Breakfast Stout.
I don't think it's breakfast time, John.
Oh no! It's always breakfast. It's breakfast time somewhere. But a breakfast stout is a nice stout with oatmeal, chocolate, and caramel notes. And coffee, and it is fucking delicious.
I think if you drink a stout for breakfast, we need to have a talk.
Well, they call it breakfast stout because of the oatmeal, Derek. Come on, what are you drinking? What are you sipping there?
This is a wonderful spiced rum, the Boom Boo. Ooh. It's not a super expensive one, but it's a good one. I really like it. Got a lot of hints of, like, you know, obviously vanilla because all spiced rum is heavy on vanilla, but like there's some banana in there. You know, it's a little peppery. It's fun. It's good. I like it.
Awesome. I like it. All right.
One of the few rums I like to drink straight.
As everyone can see in chat, smaller podcast tonight. But I like to say that with a smaller podcast, it's also more intimate. It's more intimate experience. Yeah.
Every podcast needs to be five people yelling at each other.
Nah, not at all. Now it's just going to be three people yelling at each other.
Likes the smaller ones because eventually it'll be a little balanced instead of six.
Right. Him.
Basically, it'll be one big man yelling at two smaller men.
John's like, I can take the two of you on, but five other people, that's starting to get a little dicey.
That's stretching it. The five people.
It's
like,
still possible, but.
It's conceivable, I think. But I think if you and Jeff and Finn and CJ, I'm leaving Britt out of this because I would never raise a hand against Britt, but if the rest of you like ganged up on me, I'm not sure I could take you.
I was picturing like a Megazord type like assembly of
Derek's like, and I'll form the head.
No, it's honestly just like Bustin gets one of us on each arm and one of us on each leg.
Yeah, so I was gonna say, if you guys did like a Voltron style assembly,
left foot, obviously. Come
you're
on,
you're a foot.
I'm a left foot.
You're
for
a
sure.
left foot. Okay, Justin is the body.
Justin's the torso for sure.
Big Bustin is the body. Where is Jeff?
I feel like I'm the hat.
You're the hat, or the head?
No, the hat.
The hat.
I'm
okay,
just a little hat, just chilling on top.
You're a hat. Okay, so
some kind of accessory or headwear.
So then we've got Finn, CJ, and Britt.
Well, CJ's the right leg.
I feel like
Finn becomes the two arms. It's kind of an unusual. He has to like split in half to do it, but he becomes the two arms.
That sounds gross.
And then Brittany is like backpack and armor, I think.
But then you don't have a head. Jeff is the hat. You don't.
The body has a head. I watch a lot of Mecha, John, and usually what happens is that the center body of the robot, if it's a combiner, already has the head, and at most a helmet type appliance pops out from the body that it wasn't wearing before.
Am I like the Ivan Ooze of this situation?
Bulk and Skull.
Bulk and Skull. Derek, that's fucking, that's mean, man. That's just mean, dude. Holy shit. Bulk and Skull, the Biggs and Wedge of Power Rangers. Yeah. I had totally fucking forgot about those two. All right, so this is a video game podcast, and we do have video games.
In theory. About.
Big week for video games, one of the largest releases.
Big week for video games, but not exactly a huge week for like news.
Not a huge week for news, but it is a huge week for games.
Yeah, so we've got a few things to talk about tonight. We're obviously, there's no way around it, we're going to talk a lot about Baldur's Gate, a lot of conversations around Baldur's Gate, a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of talk about like, you know, is this the way that the industry should be heading? Is it unfair to judge other games against Baldur's Gate, etc.? We'll talk about that some. At Justin's suggestion, we might talk a little bit about Twisted Metal, the TV show, getting some surprising success. It's out, and it's had some really surprising success and really good ratings, and kind of went against a lot of people's expectations.
I was expecting a huge stinker, dude. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, and that might be part of the conversation, right, as a lot of people were very quick to prejudge. And then, depending on time, depending on how things break out, we might talk about how certain major gaming events recently and expos have handled, you know, COVID, especially given we've had a couple of bad COVID outbreaks from events recently, you know, and kind of, you know, what we think we can be asking and should be asking, and where we should set our expectations for that kind of stuff. We'll see, you know, where we end up time wise. There's three of us. We can make it fit. We can make it work.
Oh yeah, for sure.
There ain't five of us. We're not going to spend 45 minutes on what we've been playing.
Yeah, we don't. Although I might spend 45 minutes on what I've been playing, because I've been playing Baldur's Gate like a fucking, like a cloistered monk, deep in prayer for the last week.
I want to start. Let's hold on to, because obviously that's what you and I have both been playing. Jeff, I want to hear from you first, because I don't think it's Baldur's Gate, unless it is.
It's not Baldur's Gate, okay. But first I'm just going to give a small plug to a charity I'm raising money for. A lot of people might be familiar with Make-A-Wish Foundation. So basically they're just trying to make wishes come true for kids who are critically ill or very seriously sick. And the awesome thing about it is I think a lot of charities and like it can be very like, I guess, nebulous in terms of how much your money makes an impact. But some of the wishes are as simple as like one kid was going, you know, cancer treatment, and because they're immunocompromised as a result, they couldn't be with their friends. They just wanted a PS5 to play. That was literally their wish, PS5. So like, you know, you can imagine any kind of modest donation makes a huge dent in that. So like a lot of these are very modest and very achievable, and they make a huge difference in the lives of these children. So yeah, I'm playing in a charity softball tournament later this month, and I'm trying to raise $500. Every little bit helps. If it's $2, $5, $10, doesn't matter. It really all makes a difference. It's all going to a great cause. But yeah, you can find the link with Nanaipa there in chat. What I've been playing, against my better judgment, after a year of retirement, I am fucking back at Flight Simulator.
Yes!
It's a return!
Yeah, I was trying to, well, they announced, you know, the new iteration. I talked about it, I think, a couple months ago. It was at E3, or, you know, the time in June formerly known as E3. So there is a new version coming out next year. I was going to hold off because it sounds like the reason the current one is such a broken disaster is just because it's using code from 2006, and it sounds like the new one's going to fix most of it. But I got a new monitor, and I just had to try it out. And yeah, I'm having a good time with it. I don't really have anything extra to say. It's just nice to settle back in. It's just a super chill experience. It's really relaxing. It's something I really enjoy for the most part. So I think that's pretty much it. And then I talked about Valheim very briefly last week, but I'd spent so much time talking about Final Fantasy 16, I didn't really give it too much of the time of day. But yeah, like Valheim is something I'd recommend to anyone who really likes Minecraft. I think it's really cool. I have no problem kind of like I said, like even with Flight Simulator, it's very directionless. I have no problem really making my own kind of fun or finding my own path in games. But I know a lot of people need structure, and I think a cool thing about Valheim is it has a lot of the freedom and creativity of Minecraft. But it's definitely more structured. Like, there's more guidance. The goals are very clearly defined. There's like six bosses. And the way it kind of introduces them gradually and points you in the direction without like necessarily giving you like an objective marker, I think is really cool and interesting. And it's just honestly, I'm playing with a group of friends, and it's just a really great thing to kind of collaborate with people. And I think it's like probably more fun that way. But yeah, it's really good, and I recommend anyone who likes those kind of games try it out. I think that is pretty much all I've been playing. I got some games. I think I mentioned in chat before, but I'm after Final Fantasy 16, I kind of want to play some smaller stuff to like decompress. So I've got Tacoma lined up, a little game called Lake, where you're basically small town mail delivery, kind of a narrative game, very short. Abzu, I'm finally going to play. Love Journey, and I've heard this is, you know, basically Journey underwater. So, yeah, these should be chill, really relaxing games. I'm really stoked to play some of them. That's about all I got going on.
Okay. All right. Derek, what have you and I been playing? Cause, I mean, we've been playing the same shit. For the past week, I've been playing. All right. It's time to talk about Baldur's Gate 3. What is Derek doing? Oh, he's on the phone. Okay. So for the past week, I have been playing. I'm like talking to Derek. I thought he was like maybe eating some dinner or like just off screen, like, oh, like I eating some ramen, shoving some ramen into his face or something. But so for the past week, I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3. I've never played like pen and paper D&D, but I have played, you know, like, you know, Neverwinter Nights, Neverwinter Nights 2, Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. So like I'm familiar with, and I read like all of the Forgotten Realms books when I was a teenager. So like I'm familiar with the world. I've just never played the actual like pen and paper game. I absolutely am in love with this fucking game. It is so. Like I love games that take choice and put it back in the hands of players, right? Like player agency is absolutely key in this game. Like where do I even begin? You know, so well, I'll start with character creation. I went with Penis D. I there's like,
can you, can you describe Penis D to us?
Yeah, sure, no problem. So nobody is cut in the Forgotten Realms. Everybody is uncircumcised. So everybody's got, you know, the skin sheath. Penis A, I felt like there was an imbalance between, you know, left and right balls. It looked to me like the right ball was a little bit lower than the left ball. And I'm somebody in my personal life anyway, I appreciate symmetry.
In combat, you don't want that little discrepancy throwing you off balance.
Right.
In a tight situation.
Plus, if you have a testicle that hangs lower than the other, then you risk testicular torsion. Which is when the testicles get twisted around each other, and you have to have like surgery to fix that. So you don't want that. Penis B, I felt like the ball to shaft ratio was off. And even though like it's not like I'm running around Faerun without my pants on, but at the same time, I knew that was gonna stick in my head. Like I knew that the ball to shaft ratio was gonna be off there. And if I know it's there, then it's like a splinter in my
mind.
Hey
man, right? This is a really awful time to be coming back to the fucking podcast. Is in the middle of penis discussion.
So before I was rudely interrupted by Derek.
Penis E, by the way.
No, Derek, I'm only on penis C now. Penis C,
we're breaking down all of them.
Yeah, we gotta break down all the penile.
Penis C is a little too penis-y, if you know what I mean.
Penis C, I
can't tell if you guys are joking or you guys actually spent so much time on this that you remember.
It took me 30 seconds to figure out which dick I was picking.
You gotta look, at some point that dick is gonna be inside someone in the game. Like, you know, you would think. So
or something.
You wanna look your best. You wanna look your best. Penis C, I didn't like the grooming.
Yeah, the grooming on a couple of these was really bad.
So. Yeah, not a fan of the grooming on Penis C. I went with Penis D. Penis D, I felt, you know, it was a good size. You cannot choose different grooming per dick. You're stuck with the grooming that you that comes with the penis. And there's And see, here's the thing. You're walking around in Faerun,
right? Is
this
because I took the phone call? Is that why we're doing this?
No. I'm just starting off with my experience in Baldur's Gate 3. Baldur's Gate, if you know what I'm saying. But you can't change the grooming options because there are no, like, there's no, like, manscaped lawnmowers that exist in Faerun, so you can't like really trim your balls at all. So I went with Penis D. I like the symmetry. I want to know that, you know, I want to know in my head while I'm killing gnolls and goblins that, you know, I've got some well-formed junk. So I went with Penis D. Derek, what was your choice?
I went with Penis E.
Why? I mean, let's break it down.
It's the most heavily groomed option. It's a big deal.
Mm. Yeah, I can see how that would be important.
I believe in shaving. I don't know what to tell people.
You're a man of meticulous nature.
I shave my armpits. I'd shave my chest if I had a lot of chest hair, and I have almost none, so that's not a problem. Despite my beard, I'm not much of a bear. I don't know what to say. That's as far down that rabbit hole that I'm willing to go.
You know, somebody made a comment in chat, Derek, and I think this applies to the real world. Like if you were rolling a 20-sided die for every aspect of your life, what would you have to roll for proper grooming? What would you have to roll? What would your saving throw be?
I feel like ultimately it's charisma, right? It's charisma's got to be the stat that leads into grooming, because it's a matter like grooming affects charisma,
right?
But you have to care, right? You have to like want that, you know, and want that effect in order to put the effort in to like actually put a little product in your hair, shape up your beard, etc. Yeah. So
I feel like
if you don't have charisma, you just end up with the fucking quartering beard, and that's nobody
right.
wants
you don't
that.
Want that. You don't want
no.
that.
The Amish beard. No, thank you.
Yeah. From what I've heard, even his wife doesn't want that. Anyway. So Derek, what would your save like? What would you have to roll to get successful grooming in real life? Like, I figured for you,
dexterity.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to talk about the process of actually doing it, not deciding it, like,
I was gonna say,
look,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I'm a little, I need to go over it again, but like lining yourself up, right? Getting a nice even mm-hmm. again, you can see where I need to shave down.
I can see that
again.
Yeah.
But like getting a nice, even, symmetrical line takes a little work.
It does.
Right?
It does.
It takes a little work to know how to properly work a little clay into your hair, you know?
I mean, I wish I had that problem. I wish I could work.
You got a good beard, though, bud.
I've got a good beard. Well, it's more of a mustache, more of a beard stash, really, right now. But
you've kind of got just a whole normal thing going on. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I'm a very normal guy. But yeah, so Derek, while you were on the phone call, I was explaining that like as somebody who's never played pen and paper D&D, but who has played.
Yeah, you've read some of the books.
I think
you played like Neverwinter Nights.
So I've
played Neverwinter Nights 1 and that's it.
So I've read tons of the Forgotten Realms books.
Right.
Like Drista Orden is one of my favorite literary characters. I've played Neverwinter Nights, Neverwinter Nights 2, like the expansions like Shadows of Om. I've played Planescape Torment.
Okay.
I played Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. I played Icewind Dale. So I'm
so
very
you played the classic, a lot yeah. of the well-known classic D&D games.
Yeah.
But all that, most of that's based on Advanced Dungeons and Dragons second edition.
Right.
Right. Other than Neverwinter Nights is third and I think 3.5 for Neverwinter Nights 2. So like that's a little more modern, but like fifth is just a lot more streamlined.
As somebody who loves like the world of D&D, like you know, I've read some of the books in Kryn as well, you know, the Dragonlance books. But Forgotten Realms is my favorite by a country mile. As somebody who was super into that world but never just sat down to play the pen and paper game, I went from like Baldur's Gate 3, like I was always kind of ambivalent on playing D&D. But I'm fucking stoked.
Now you're fucking ready
like,
for
I'm
it.
Fucking,
not just because it's something to do with the buds. By the way, Dorian in chat saying, I can't wait for the SDGC D&D game.
Oh, I can't wait now either.
It is coming. It is. I know that we've been radio silent on it for a while. I know I originally was like, yeah, I want to try to get it started early this year. The problem is it's all on me, right? So like I'm doing a shitload of planning. I haven't had I've been busy with a lot of side projects, but like I think especially like at the get together might be a good time to like hash out some of the details with everybody. Get some character ideas finalized, get it ready to get rolling. So we are going to do that.
So,
for sure.
So Derek, let me ask you this. Did you get the fire sword at the very beginning?
No.
No?
I wouldn't have been able to use it anyway. I'm a druid. Yeah.
Okay, but you can give it to your party members.
I guess that's true.
So what I did was I used Shadowheart to cast Command Drop on that Commander Demon, He just dropped his flaming sword.
See shit like that. That's brilliant. I love that.
I just went and picked it up and I was like, oh shit. I was like, fuck.
We should have Martha could use that because I'm playing with my wife and she's playing a fighter specializing in like two-handed weapons. She just wants to be somebody who hits fucking hard. And I respect that.
That's exactly.
I respect a strong woman who wants to see people die in front of her eyes for daring to stand in her way.
Oh, Karlach.
I'm playing a druid. Because I want to be like a supportive, like healing caster with a little utility.
No, you want to fuck people as a bear.
I don't. I actually picked the subclass of druid that does not give me the bear form. So,
You don't want to have bear sex?
I wanted the ability to replenish my own spell slots, and that meant more to me.
Derek, you totally missed out on the opportunity to build a relationship with someone and then say, I'd like to bear myself to you. I'd like to bear it all to you.
How are you like this?
I don't know.
But anyway, so yeah, it's like, you know, my wife's playing a fighter. I'm playing a druid. We're keeping usually Asterion and Will on right now. So we have our rogue, and Will as an arcane caster, kind of flexible, also has the charisma to actually, because none of us have charisma. Are you kidding me? We can't persuade shit. So, yeah, it's good. I've met obviously Lazelle. I've met Gale. You know, I have not met Karlach, who everyone keeps telling me I need to meet. Will happen sooner or later.
So I gotta tell you, when I first met Karlach, I audibly went, oh yeah. As I was telling you, so Karlach is a big red sexy tiefling.
She's a tiefling, yeah.
I'm playing
a tiefling, by the way. So tiefling druids are an interesting combo, yeah. Especially given the first act of the game. Wasn't expecting that to be, you know, that
she's very red. She's very hot. She like figuratively and literally.
John, if you keep watching Critical Role like animated stuff, you're eventually going to become a jester stan. I know it.
Derek, I'll tell you what. Most of the other party members, like all your other party members, whenever they act like, you know, do something in battle, they're like, you know, it's my time. Or, you know, like, you know, rook to knight 7. But she just goes, oh, fuck yeah. And I'm like,
that's a good way to react.
Oh, Karlach. And she's like, if you heal her, like my main character heals her, she's like, oh, thanks, baby. And I'm like, like I said it before we went live, but not that I'm saying like, you know, young teens should be playing this game necessarily, but I will say that Karlach is going to be a sexual awakening for so many people. This generation.
I'll tell you right now too, because she's a tiefling, there's a solid chance she's quite a bit older than you, so you can call her mommy.
Derek, you know how I feel about that too. Yeah.
Tieflings live like 200-250 years, if I remember right. So
yeah, so Dorian says John's has a type strikes again. Yeah, my type is apparently large monster women who
evil women who can fucking kill him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also Vicky.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I love Vicky. she's not evil, but she could absolutely kill me. But here's one thing that I love, like in all seriousness, this right here for like there was a moment that happened earlier this week that was just like made me sit back and just gasp. And so I came across a burning inn. Right. There's like an inn that's burning down and there's people inside screaming like, oh, we got to save so-and-so, right? You got to save so-and-so. And you can hear the guy in there and, you know, he's like, oh, help me. So I was really low. So I just got done like finding some gnolls and I was, you know, like I needed to like, you know, replenish my spell slots and stuff like that. And I was low on health. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do a long rest and I'm going to come back and save the people from the burning inn. So I did my long rest and I came back and the inn had fucking burned down.
Yeah, it turns out you can't sleep overnight when an inn is on fire, dipshit.
Like, so, but here's the thing. I brought that video game mentality into it, right? Like, let me replenish my health and everything will be fine. But no, everything is happening in real time. So that inn fucking burned down.
Rev actually did an article kind of investigating like the game's tendency for like certain things to advance, you know, not in like real time, but like certain events actually being on a timer you know, it's in so terms cool. of like you took too long, did too many quests, rested too many times, etc. So this thing happened without you. And I think that's interesting to put.
I really like it,
aspects
actually.
Of that.
I really like just, it because it gives.
I'm just thinking back to our Final Fantasy 16 talk last week, where it's like you do the 40 side quests at the end,
yeah,
right
yeah.
before the end of the game.
Oh, fuck, game over.
It's yeah, like, exactly.
Like, okay, Ultima is about to.
That's how turn. This game actually works. So.
Yeah, it's like Ultima is about to turn everyone into the world of zombies. Then he's going to end the world, but first I got to go pick.
I am really glad that you picked like a fictional scenario version of the end of FF16. So yeah. That would have been pretty lame, I think, if that was the actual end scenario. But
yeah, I don't want to spoil it. For
yeah,
anyone.
Thank you for that. For a moment, I was like, "Is he gonna?" I was like, "Oh no, he's saying some bullshit."
But yeah. So that to me really just sold the urgency of everything that's happening in the game, and like
it makes
really
you role play. It makes you think about making this. And that's the thing. A game like Baldur's Gate, right? Something like this, which is kind of. We'll get to this a little more later, but like, I mean, fuck it. We're kind of in Baldur's Gate now. So like, this is just going to extend into the discussion about its success. But like, the thing about Baldur's Gate is it is a game that makes you feel like your choices matter. And it's not in terms of like having a bunch of branching storylines, but rather in having a bunch of small things, small stories, small side quests, small character stories, who are affected by the world around them in surprisingly interconnected ways. And it's very obvious that there's just a lot of stuff you will never see your first time through the game because you will just make choices that lock things off entirely. But you know, again, the fact that like, again, the inn can burn down because you took too long and fucked around means that when you come up to a burning inn, you have to make the decision of, am I doing this or not?
Yeah.
You know, instead of just, oh, this is a side quest I'll finish later.
It was wild, dude. Like, and you can't bring that, okay, I see, like, you know, I see a quest giver, you know, logo, glowing pillar of light mentality to this game.
Yeah.
Because things will happen irregardless of whether or not you're there.
There are obvious limits to that. Like, you can't make a game with infinite storytelling complexity, and a lot of it's like really clever artifice in setting up an illusion of things being more complicated than they are. But little things like an inn being able to burn down because you took a rest instead of, you know, doing it or going off to do another quest instead, like, and leaving it to burn down. It takes you out of the mindset of playing most games where it's just a checklist of to-dos, and it puts you closer to the mindset of actually sitting down and playing like a tabletop, like pen and paper RPG, like Dungeons and Dragons, you know, with a DM who's presenting you with a scenario, and it's like, what are you doing? You don't know what's going to happen from this. And I'm sure that more and more playthroughs will strip the magic out of that, right, as people begin to understand what makes certain things happen. But playing through this ignorant, right, and coming in and allowing yourself to, you know, to be invested in it as it presents itself to you, right? This is a game like, don't look up guides, don't do that shit, don't. I understand now why Larian was like, don't look up character building guides, don't do this shit,
just fuck around, find out.
We want you not to do this shit, because the more you look up about this game, right? And I think look up in terms of like guides and like places like Fextra Life and shit, right? Not people talking about their experiences. You know, but I think that ruins the magic. You know, if you start to try to break apart the if-thens of it.
So I've been trying to figure out whether or not Jeff would like this game.
I think I would love it.
And Jeff, there's difficulty levels.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've been interested since it entered early access. It's on my list to grab. I was saying in chat, like, I feel dumb. I didn't even know I didn't know Baldur's Gate was part of, like, I didn't know the relationship with D&D. I never played. Like, I've heard of Neverwinter Nights. I heard of Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. I think actually there was a studio here in Edmonton that remastered them a few years ago, Beamdog, and they were on the news.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the Neverwinter Nights remaster was a disaster.
I don't know. I don't think it's bad. I think it's fine.
But, it's just something that's completely foreign to me, but I've always kind of wanted to get into like one of, I don't know what the genre is exactly, but like this type of RPG, like I mentioned before.
You know, like tabletop, the pen and paper RPG, like, yeah.
Like I tried Divinity Original Sin 2, and
I fell off it pretty hard.
Yeah, I fell off and like, too. But like I could tell like there's a version of something like this that I'm gonna love, but it's not this. And
Baldur's Gate looked like that.
And I love that, like, you know, again, I haven't played it, but it seems to me like it's one, because I was just talking about how I love kind of games where I can kind of make my own path. Like, that's what I'm doing a lot of these. Obviously, this is a game with a campaign and a structure, but it's like the part I get frustrated in with games is like where there's maybe even a few different ways, but like kind of like if you can't figure it out, you get stuck. And that's what happened with Divinity Original Sin 2. And it sounds like with this one, it's like if you fuck up or can't figure, like something else will present itself, or the inn will burn down, or like, but it doesn't sound like there's huge barriers. Like,
I think it's much more cleverly designed. Mm-hmm. I think being based on D&D 5th edition helps like the gameplay mechanics and systems be based on something that, to be frank, is much more thought out than like the gameplay systems behind Divinity Original Sin. You know, mm-hmm. because, you know, one is Divinity based on another existing, or is that completely original to Larian?
It's original. And, yeah. And
that it's the difference between like a small game studio coming up with their own rule set and like the biggest, most extensively playtested RPG system in the world.
Derek, that was my issue with Divinity is like I was playing Divinity and I was like, you know, I played it for a couple hours and I was like, the whole time I realized I was just wishing this was like a Neverwinter Nights or Baldur's Gate game.
Yeah.
And like, this is, honestly, dude, this like, is that. Like, and like, I couldn't get over that and I dropped it. Does that make sense? I was like, this is good, but it just makes me want another Icewind Dale or Neverwinter Nights. And, you know, honestly, dude, like, God, with the way that Larian has handled Baldur's Gate 3, Neverwinter Nights 3, baby. Do it. Like, let's make
somebody should be on it. I don't know if it should be Larian, because they've said that they want their next game to be something smaller in scale.
Yeah, I wouldn't for that. But
I think it's so here's the thing. Like I bounced off Divinity Original Sin 2 because it was bullshit hard, because it felt masochistic. Or no, not masochistic, sadistic. It felt other side. It felt sadistic in the way that it tried to build like the world and the story progression, et cetera, quests like for the character. You walk into that first town and it's like, there's so few things you can do that don't feel like they're immediately throwing you in over your head. Mm-hmm. Right. Something about the logic behind Baldur's Gate's world presents as a lot more approachable. The storytelling aspects, right, feel more at home in like something like Dragon Age or Mass Effect, right? It really feels like Golden Age BioWare.
It does, actually, know. Yeah.
And which, I mean, like, great. And I don't think it's as hard, right? Even, I mean, like, Baldur's Gate 3 can still absolutely just, like, sack tap you for no reason.
Oh, dude, for sure.
So, like, always be saving. Like, always be saving. Save. But if you wander into a fight... In Divinity Original Sin 2, it felt like every single fight I wandered into was, I was not set up. I was like, I need to be 5 levels earlier from the start to even handle this. Baldur's Gate, if you run into stuff you can't handle, like, it should be plainly obvious what mistakes you made, or you can be like, I'm just not supposed to do this yet. I'm going to go in another direction and figure some shit out. And
it's
you can.
And it's not like there's a lack of shit to do if you've hit a barrier. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's so much fucking shit to do. There's so much shit to see. Like, dude, I just, like, you know, a couple hours into my game, I stumbled into the Underdark, and I was like, I'm already in the Underdark. What the fuck?
You shouldn't have done that.
And I promptly got hammered by a Bulette. And then I was like, no. I want to go back. So I went back, and I avoided the Bulette, climbed some cliffs, and I got just railroaded by a fucking spectator. Which for anybody who doesn't know, it's like a beholder. And I was like, and dude, it ruined me. And I was like, this game, but here's the thing, dude, I loved that, because as somebody who really loves, like, you know, the Metroid franchise for that feeling of it's a whole ass hostile fucking world versus you. and you, all you have to rely on is yourself, Baldur's Gate is really scratching that itch for me. The world feels dangerous. And
meanwhile,
like
me and Martha ran into like, you know, a swamp hag, you know, in a side quest that like,
yeah, I did her. Yeah.
That story quest was, like we just weren't quite ready for that. But then we turned around, we went another direction. We found like a goblin camp. You know, we found some goblins who'd overtaken a small town and like we could handle that, you know, so, and it was like, okay, it was some work. Village? Yes, yes. But like clever usage of like segmenting off, playing a little stealthy, like we tore that place up, right? And I sent a gnome into space by accident. So, huh?
I talked my way in there, didn't kill anyone.
Yeah, but where's the fun in that?
But here's the thing though. Very early in the game. So I'm in Act 2 now. I just started Act 2, and what I will say is that I had an option to kill someone that I think a lot of people would have taken, and I didn't. And all of a sudden, that person has popped up in Act 2 and is now a fairly large part of the main storyline. And I'm like, what happens if you kill this person? Because it was
curious. Yeah.
It's just such an, like the game is like, it's given to you as like, you know, this choice you're making is not the end of the world. Right. Like, and so I chose not to kill this person. Now this person is a major player in Act 2. And I'm like,
there's permanently missable party characters right in the first act. Like a lot of permanently missable,
as I found out, by the way,
really interesting. Yeah. So just like, it's a big, very organic feeling game, organic feeling in terms of like, you rarely feel like, oh, I've been shepherded down this one of two hallways, you know? I think you would really like it, Jeff. I just think you also need to always be saving.
But Jeff, like, you're somebody who appreciates a very rich narrative, and player choice, right?
Story
and
setup's interesting. I want to know what's up.
The thing, again, like, you gave the Mass Effect call out. The other thing I love about, again, what I've seen of the game is I love a big, good narrative, but I struggle with ones that are kind of presented in the form of like what From Software does, or even something that's like very, very heavily text-based. I kind of need traditional voice acting, traditional cutscenes. Like,
you come from a realm of like cinema in a lot of ways, right? I mean, when you joined SDGC, like a part of what you were doing was pause for popcorn, you know? So like, obviously, like you're looking for expression, you're looking for like acting and performance and character building and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So. For sure. And like it seems like it has that. And that's not to say I don't respect games that don't have that approach. It's just they don't hit the same for me personally, because that's just not how my brain really kind of processes big emotions. It's different just reading them on a screen versus like hearing them delivered by someone. So I think it's very cool that like you, and especially like, you know, kind of immersing your own character in the world, it's very cool to see your character represented in those scenes visually. And I think it's really cool, from what I understand, and very rare, playing co-op with friends, to see their characters in the cutscenes.
Yes,
with that you. Cool. That is so rare in games. It usually it's just one of them, or it shows each person their own character, but not everyone.
That was one of the first questions I had as we were starting the game, because I was like, okay, Martha, how is this going to work with the cutscenes? Who is it going to show?
Yeah.
Or is it going to do like the same cutscene and just like, you know, like, are we only going to see player one? Are we each going to see
kind of like in Destiny, right? Like, or something.
Maybe,
like,
I don't know. I've never played Destiny, but instead, like in me and Martha did, you know, split screen co-op, which, by the way, like the game's only out on PC right now. It's hitting PlayStation in like
September 6th.
Also cross play and cross save, by the way.
Good. Yeah. But like even the PC version has local split screen co-op. So it's been great to just like run this out to the TV, get a pair of Xbox controllers, you know, But the very first cutscene like opens up and both the characters are like waking up in the opening predicament, and to realize that like, oh, we have different camera angles even on our cutscenes because we're each waking up in a different like pod in the same starting location.
That's cool.
It's like, oh, they care, right? The first person who gets to any like location triggered cutscene is the person in that cutscene. The second person will be there like with the party, but the person who ran ahead is the primary like experiencer of the events. You know, if somebody gets into a conversation, like my half of the screen will be me talking to somebody and Martha can just be off running around, fucking off doing whatever, you know, or she can come up, listen, join in. It expands to full screen. She can get like a vote.
That's
in
very cool.
What we say and say, like, cool. Hey, your partner is, which I presume is how it works in like even 4-player co-op, is different people can say, like, we're voting on these options, but the person having the conversation has the final say. Very, very D&D, you know? Mm-hmm. So this is an excellent, you know, co-op for people who are, who have the fortitude to deal with it. Because, like, again, I say this is a lot more streamlined than stuff like Divinity and stuff like older D&D. But this is still D&D. I still had to explain how to calculate armor class to Martha. And I think I watched her start to cry as she realized, like, that this is just too many rules. So, and I don't blame, because a lot of people don't like numbers. So.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's important to point out to a lot of people, you know, is, you know, hey, yes, this is a turn-based RPG, but it is also very much steeped in the D&D rules. You are rolling dice for literally just about everything you do.
It makes it as approachable as possible, but you're getting in the weeds of some rules.
Yeah.
So.
Like, you will have, like, I had to look up D&D rules.
I was going to say, like, I don't mind that if it's presented in the game, but if people are telling me, go watch this YouTube video, go to the site, I'm kind of...
Everything has an explainer in the game, yeah, right? When you pick classes, it has, like, here's the things that you get for doing this, and you can hit, like, the back button and get more in-depth explanations on each thing, or, like, the highlighted words, so it's like, what does advantage mean? That's what advantage means.
And I want to say, I want to stress... I didn't go look up the rules because I felt I had to. I was just intrigued at that point.
Yeah.
The nice thing is, again, if you're wanting to look something up, like 99% of it is going to be looking up the actual rules to D&D 5, which are extremely well documented at this point. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I am having an absolute, this game is just a joy.
You want to talk about a stealth game of the year contender. You know, I was expecting this to be big, but frankly, this is already feeling like it could be my game of the year.
Well, and it's also like overtaking some biggest Steam launches ever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's this game is mad, and it's still not out on consoles. This is going to be huge. I think it's like the number one pre-order game on PS5 right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to double dip on this one.
Wow.
That's how much
you think
I love
you and
it.
Vicky will do co-op? Or do you think Vicky, do you think your marriage couldn't survive it?
I think Vicky doesn't give a shit about D&D. So I doubt it. I might ask her. I would love for her to join me. But
it's easier when you can sit on a couch together with controllers and, you know.
Right. Yeah. Which is why that's why I want to get it on PS5. Right. But honestly, the most compelling reason to get on to do that is because it has cross save. Like, you know, I can just bring my, and you know, this game is going to get at least two expansions. So it's going to get at least two, if not more, based on just how, because the, you know, I mean, I right now, like,
it's
I
the
know
way that the franchise works, to be fair. I mean,
it is well, like, and but also, like, right now, Larian is like, oh shit, like, even Larian was not expecting the response to this. And you know that they are already brainstorming DLC ideas. I would love to go to Waterdeep or Neverwinter
We got this goofy Waterdavian asshole Gale in the party, and I was like, all right, I see you.
And by the way, a very, very classic one of the most prominent Forgotten Realms characters pops up at the beginning of Act Two. Put a huge smile on my face. I can tell you who it is.
Okay.
But I was like, but if you know anything about Forgotten Realms, you will know exactly who this is. And I'm like, oh shit, it's that person. I almost said the name. But I don't want to spoil it for anyone. So now I'm like, are there any other characters from the books I read who are going to pop up? It's kind of actually, Derek, it's actually kind of fucking amazing that I never played pen and paper D&D, right?
In retrospect, like, you seem the type, which is a big part of why I wanted to do SCGC D&D, right? It was like, it could be something we do together, but also, like, I know most of the crew has not really played any D&D meaningfully. I think Finn and Britt seem to have a little experience.
Well, I'll tell you this much, Derek, like, Baldur's Gate, like, I originally was just going to roll like a joke character, but I'm like fully taking it seriously now.
I'm trying to craft a campaign that allows for both. right? That allows you to play it very seriously and like has its moments of serious storytelling. But like, there's so much I can't make a story and setting and not be a little funny with it. You know what I mean? This is not the kind of person I am. So we're going to be closer to the Dimension 20 side of things than the Critical Role side of things, but nowhere near as polished or cool as either. So
Derek, I was going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Because I thought of you the moment I met this character. What are your thoughts on Asterion?
Okay. So first off, I took, I think, longer than I was supposed to figure out what's up with this asshole. Because in retrospect, and like, this isn't even a spoiler. The internet has already made it open. Like, you can tell this stuff from like, basically from minute one, if you really pay attention to him. But, I mean, he's a Dracula man.
He's a vampire.
And like, now I'm like, oh yeah, he's got the fucking teeth and the red eyes and he's an albino. The fucking that, right? And like all of the little hints from the moment you meet him.
Yeah.
But Asterion's a fun character. He's a good example. The whole cast so far is largely, it's my favorite kind of D&D cast, which is when you get a ragtag group of assholes, right? Who are all hurt a little bit, right? Who have been through some shit, who are hiding, you know, their vulnerability, and who need to warm up and open up. That is
Asterion craving that nussy.
Yeah, that's what I said on the Twitters. I'm sure I'm not the only person who's ever said that, but
Jesus Christ.
Who need they nussiate? But
my God.
But like, you know, Asterion, like, it's very easy to be like, oh, you have a vampire party member and he's a bad guy. And it's like, well, not really. He's somebody who's been forged by circumstances. Right. You get to meet, like, everyone's clowning on like Shadowheart being like the fucking Ashley Williams, the racist of the cast. And
okay,
like,
so explain this to me, because I'm romancing her and I haven't seen any racism.
Like, I mean, the very first thing she says if you meet her and you've got Lazelle in the party is like, oh, that thing, get it away from me. Like,
I mean, I take it as that she just doesn't like Githyanki. Like,
that's,
I mean,
called racism, John.
But I mean, Githyanki are like roundly evil.
Huh?
Like, Githyanki are like murderously evil. Like, I wouldn't like them either.
John,
like,
that's racism. They're not.
Githyanki are evil as shit.
No, they're not.
Dude, I mean, like, yes,
to a certain degree culturally, but like, John, the first section of the game is you running into the druid circle, and the druids think all the tieflings are evil because that's who they are inherently. Like,
but the Githyanki are literal astral plane pirates. Like, they're not good people.
They're not bad people. This is their culture. They're
Derek, the Githyanki are bad.
You can Githyanki and them not be evil characters. They are inherently.
So somebody in chat, Githyanki are kind of dicks, but they don't see it that way.
Right. It's like Githyanki are just,
didn't see themselves that
the
way.
The Githyanki are just space elves, John. That's all they are.
Yeah, but they're very evil space elves.
Not really.
Derek, the Githyanki are evil. They literally made a deal with Tiamat. Derek's like,
Shadowheart's still racist.
I'm just saying, Derek.
I'm just saying, you got to be willing to judge people as individuals. And she meets an individual Githyanki and is just like, don't like you.
I ran into a Githyanki, and the first thing he did was tell me, literally, out in the world, literally, he was like, oh, look, a human. Give me one good reason I shouldn't run you through right now. And then he referred to me as scum.
Well, he's racist, clearly.
They're evil, Derek. The Githyanki are evil.
So this is, here's the thing. This actually gets into it's a big conversation that's been going on in D&D for a while, which is like D&D and like classic fantasy tropes, right, are often built on a sort of like biological essentialism of certain races of peoples. And for a long time, we've been okay with that because of the idea of like, well, dwarves are dwarves and elves are elves and orcs are orcs. And, you know, humans are everything, right? Like, because, well, it's not racist because like they're, you know, dwarves can be different from humans. But the problem is, right, like we've come to a, you know, understanding of like for people of color, right, especially, it's very uncomfortable to see the way that something like D&D goes. Well, all elves are this way. right? All dwarves are this way. All orcs are this way, especially when orcs often fundamentally fall into like stereotypes about indigenous peoples, you know, of being like dangerous savages, etc.
I would say this, if you're just like a farmer in the fields, right, in Faerun, and your only experience with orcs are the pillaging, murdering, and raping orcs, then yeah, I would hate orcs too. If that's all I knew of orcs.
Yeah, but I think the argument that and the conversation people are having is like, we've got to do better with D&D and with other, and that's why even like D&D is making big. It used to be that if you picked like an elf, and I think Baldur's Gate might, it defaults this way, but you're not hard locked into it. Like if you pick an elf, you get like +2 to intelligence and +1 to dexterity or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, because they're more nimble, right?
Well, but like, that's like saying that black people run better. You know what I mean? That's the argument people are making, is like, you can't really say that certain races are by default, especially when they're all meant to be extensions of human player characters. Right. So like, this is just a big thing we're grappling with right now and trying to find out how to mix these. And Baldur's Gate does some things good and some things bad with it. Right. Baldur's Gate gives you the option to pick, you know, where your stat bonuses go. They're not tied to your race. You know, I think it's reasonable to be like, yeah, elves have dark vision. It's literally the way their eyes work. But like, to be like, yeah, elves like have an average IQ of like 15 points higher is getting a little bit skull calipery, you know? But like, you know, so they avoid that. But then a lot of the game's story, at least in this first act, has been very like, I've definitely seen like black, like nerds, content creators, writers talk about like, man, I'm dealing with a lot of racism in this game, and I deal with enough racism as is for the whole first arc of the game to be about racism. You know, so it's not, I think it is interesting, right? To think about the way these things evolve.
I think it's a nuanced conversation, right?
It is. It like, is nuanced.
Like it's not like, out here in the real world, we can look at, you know, we could look like, for example, anti-black racism and say that's bad. You know, like this is fucking racist. And
straight up.
And the racist here should be thrown into a meat grinder or like a wood chipper or something like that, right? Which I'm totally for. But in something like
wood chippers for 2024. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Vote in the wood chipper.
Is strapped to the front of a truck and just
Dead Rising style.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, and for something like D&D, like to me, again, like I'm an idiot, right? So like, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt, but like, to me, like an elf that lives 1200 years, it makes sense for that elf to be smarter than your average, you know, human that lives for an average of 80 years because they've accumulated so much knowledge and wisdom over the years.
Yeah, probably.
You know, like it makes sense for a, I'll give you another example. It makes sense for an orc to get like a strength buff, right? Because they,
if they're literally physically bigger and bulkier on average.
Like, yeah, you know. like so, you know, like I can see where some people are coming from, and I on this issue, I can see. I hate to be a both sides guy, but I think there are cogent arguments to make for either side.
Well, and I think like, again, the character creator in Baldur's Gate, which is based on changes that have been made to D&D recently, right, is the idea that like there is a difference between actual racial traits of like, again, elves having dark vision, for example, or like dragonborn having a breath attack. Because you're like, hey, humans are not generally born with the ability to spit ice because of their blue dragon, it'd be white dragon heritage, versus a dragonborn is. So like, it makes sense to have those differences versus the traditional stat bonuses being things you can pick out now. Because now you can totally be like, yeah, my elf wizard is 800 years old and has been studying magic for his whole life. So yeah, obviously he's more intelligent than everyone else. And this is a part of that, you know, versus, you know, if I have like a 600 year old elf who's been a line cook all his life, but has suddenly found the talent for music and has become a bard, like, he's probably not the most well-read dude. If he's a 600-year-old line cook, you know? So,
I actually started as an orc bard, but I just could not take myself seriously.
I don't really like the way the orcs look, because I hated that too.
Yeah, I was not a fan.
I wanted to make, like, an orc, like a suave orc rogue.
With, like, small tusks, right? Like, small...
For the tusks, but is this... They have big lips and the big, like, brutish piggy noses, like, and kind of sloping forehead. They look a little stereotypically dumb. I love, again, like, not to bring up the most popular shit in D&D right now, but if you look up Critical Role, there's a character named Ford, spelled like fjord, and John, I'd like you to Google this. So Critical Role Ford fjord is a half orc.
Critical Role
spelled like the fjords, like you're pining for the fjords.
Like Ford tough. All
yeah
right. Fjord,
although it's pronounced Ford, so, but like, that's a half orc character.
Oh, that's right? Basically you as an orc.
Well, you know, we're moving in the direction of, like, okay, he's got the greener skin. Now his tusks are filed down.
Oh, dude, you know who this is? That's Tony Stark.
Shut the fuck up. But
that's
like,
what he looks like, Derek. I'm going to drop this shit in chat. You motherfuckers tell me. You tell me that this does not look... That's Tony Stark. Right
there. Shut the fuck up.
He is a variant of Tony Stark. Dude, tell me I'm fucking lying. Look at his hair and his goatee. Like,
now the bonus I will give to Baldur's Gate, while I'm not a big, well, I'm like not super into the way that their orcs are designed, in terms of, like, I kind of like them to be a little less like piggish and a little more humanoid. They do at least make, like, the female orcs look like female versions of the male orcs. And we all know fantasy has that problem of, like, the dude version of a race will be, like, the wild out there thing, and then the female version of a race will just be, like, a lady with colored skin and maybe horns or ears, and that's it. So, you know, they're at least consistent.
But I just looked up Jester. Hello.
I told you you'd be a Jester fan. Although she's not mean. She's very much the opposite.
Oh, see, so, I don't... Who wants that?
So, but, like... We got on a real big aside about, like, tabletop RPGs in general. I've seen a lot of people being like, this is the way forward, right? Games like Baldur's Gate 3, like, this should be, everyone's saying, like, the new standard. The thing that you should be making. Look at how successful this is. If you just make a Baldur's Gate 3, you will have this success. And I think that's a complicated conversation, right? Like, I don't think it's that straightforward.
It's not. And you know, like I said, there are arguments, I think, on either side that hold water on an issue like that. But what I'm thankful for is that the conversation's being had at all, right? Because,
yeah,
because, you know, like, you know, it because it's an interesting, you know, like, I would not have considered that before you brought it up to me, right? Like, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I can see that. Like, I'm still of the mindset that, like, you know, I can see why, like, elves, for example, would have certain advantages over, like, a gnome, right? Or, like, an orc would have certain advantages over a, you know, like, a human. But
oh,
that
okay.
Being said,
I got confused for a moment from where we, I see, we're back on. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
continue.
I'm
sorry.
I was just like in general, I'm glad all these conversations are happening. Because, yeah, again, like, you know, the things that we enjoy won't get better unless we criticize them and we pick them apart and put them back together. Yeah. Right?
And sometimes you think about a thing and you go, like, am I seeing something here? Am I seeing a problem? And maybe you eventually decide, like, I don't know that I see the problem, but, like, I thought about it and I can understand where somebody else would see a problem and, like, you know, we're thinking about.
But, Jeff, I feel bad. I feel like we're not giving you much of a chance to talk, Jeff.
No, I'm enjoying listening to it all. I just, like I said, I haven't played the game. I have no exposure to D&D. I just have, you know, 90% of the words you guys are saying make no sense to me, but
well,
I find it fascinating.
We're moving in a direction that Jeff will understand a bit better.
Well,
I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Derek, I mean, you were touching on, like, you know, this kind of, like, raising the bar and raising the standard, and I don't know if that's where we're going next, but...
Yes, 100%.
I've had that conversation... with people in the Discord about, like, certain games too. And I think it's like, I think it's fine to look at sometimes games and be like, this should be in every game from now on. Like things like, to me personally, that's really important. Being able to save at any time, especially when like you're older and like your time's valuable. Like I like to play games for 20 minutes before work. If I get stuck in a 2-hour cutscene, I can't save, I can't quit. Like that's fucking bullshit. I'm sorry. Like it doesn't make the game harder, it doesn't make the game better. It's just a waste of my goddamn time. That's, you know, within reason, that's something I think most games should have. But like once or twice in a generation, you get like a game that's just a pinnacle of the medium. And I don't feel like it's fair to make that the standard. I think we should be like, this is an exceptional achievement, but we should not look down on games that don't reach that. This kind of happened when The Witcher 3 came out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, even more recently, Breath of the Wild. And I'm not going to entertain the comparisons because I really don't understand why they were compared. But like, you know, something like Horizon Zero Dawn, it's like, regardless of where you stand with the two, like both can be good games. And just because every game is not doing what Breath of the Wild is in terms of reinventing how we approach game design doesn't mean they're not good and doesn't mean they still can't come out. And the other reality is like a lot, the circumstances in which games are made are not all equal. And
yeah, for sure.
Studios had the opportunity to release this in early access and take their time and, you know, take feedback and gradually work on it. They're both the developer and the publisher. To my knowledge, they were not heavily pressured. It's very different than a studio working under Sony being told like, or EA or Ubisoft or whatever, be like, this game has to come out in 6 months because it's lined up, you know, this Avatar game's lined up with the movie and we have all these stakeholders and they cannot like,
yeah,
it's just, you just can't apply the same thing. So
I think the brand recognition of like Baldur's Gate and Dungeons and Dragons, like both separately and combined, adds a lot to that too, right? Of like most studios trying to make their own CRPG are not gonna have Dungeons and Dragons, you know, as wind in their sails. They're not gonna be making the third entry and they're not gonna be making a sequel follow up. However, it's so far past, it's really not a sequel. But anyway, to one of the most like highly praised games of all time, you know, like you mentioned, they were in early access for years. And all that time, they kept making money off sales of the game that would not have happened if this was not Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
You know, if this was just, you know, fucking, you know, blah, 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 that would never have happened. You know, so there's circumstances behind why this game has blown up and like they could afford to put this much money and polish into it that. I agree with what a lot of people are saying that you can't expect this out of developers. This is a really unique situation.
Honestly, like I did not expect to go into talking about Baldur's Gate to like get into conversations like this, right? And I feel like that is kind of the fundamental, you know, power of games like this, right? Like not just Baldur's Gate, but like, you know, D&D in general, right? Like, you know, it's when you have, and I think like Derek, how many people worldwide play D&D? Like it's like in the,
oh, I don't even want to think, I could not even begin to get
like
that
in the
number,
tens and ten, like maybe 100 million, right? Like it's the most popular.
I think that's probably overdoing it. I think tabletop RPGs are still a huge niche, but D&D is easily the most popular of the lot. And the thing is, D&D's brand recognition is so big because of other things, right? D&D is huge, not just because of people playing the game, but because of podcasts like Critical Role and Dimension 20, right? It's big because there was an old cartoon and some Capcom games and some famous PC games and now a new game and a new movie, right? Like
what campaign setting is the Critical Role stuff setting?
It's completely original.
Oh, it's original. Okay.
It's not like Forgotten Realms or something. No.
Okay.
But yeah, like, you know, it is a massive multimedia like brand that I know for a while didn't have a lot of power. It was very much like a super nerdy thing, but Critical Role made it cool again, right? And then Dimension 20, I think it really was like the 1-2 punch of permanently cementing, you know, D&D as something just like a centerpiece of like mainstream nerdy culture. you know, and that's just why, like, again, like, I don't think you can pretend this is a normal CRPG, right? You could never make like a Disco Elysium and it blow up like this, right?
Right.
You know, you could never make a Fallout. Well, maybe you even could with Fallout. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe you could go back to those roots with something with that kind of brand recognition. I don't know. But like the fact that I even question it there, you know, mm-hmm. What I do think, you know, a lot of people saying like, you know, this should be the gold standard, etc. Something I do think people are touching on that I think a lot of articles talking about, like why we can't make that comparison miss, is that a lot of what Baldur's Gate 3 succeeds at, to me, is stuff that would work regardless of scale, right? Like we talked about, like the cast of characters being compelling, interesting, weirdo band of rogues, right? Having that old, like BioWare energy, right?
Not yes. That Aiden Pierce.
There's no iconic hats in the in this.
Just
game.
About every one of these assholes in Baldur's Gate 3 is going to become iconic for real. And it was just well written, well designed, well thought out, engaging characters that people connect to. Right, a lot of the things that made this game blow up, the shit like the bear fucking, right, like is like we can joke, but the thing is, they found something weird and kind of funny, right? And kind of like, you're gonna have an opinion. You're gonna be like, that's fucking weird. But like, mm-hmm. You know, if you're gonna let me be weird, I respect that. And a much smaller game could have done that, right? Mm-hmm. A much smaller game than Baldur's Gate 3 currently is could have had like the weird shit that's going viral about being able to like throw the child. You know, that's I've seen lots of clips of people figuring out they can throw children and like,
oh, it's, I'm gonna the go glee do that shit tonight, obviously.
Right. Like. And like, again, you don't have to be a 120 hour RPG to let people do weird shit that goes viral. You know,
Eric, have you met the dog yet?
I've met the dog. I accidentally you know upset the dog.
I found a ball. If you throw it, he'll go get it and bring it back.
I love him.
Derek, but, did you meet the owlbear cub yet?
I did. We got it. We can't bring up all of these instances, John.
I mean, these aren't spoilers, but
no.
I mean,
but like, we got to let people discover shit.
The owlbear cub and the dog are friends now.
But it's I think the thing is that like a lot of us have missed like old BioWare, right? And I can see a version of Baldur's Gate 3 that got made on the Xbox 360 that was a 30-hour RPG, right? And a lot of stuff was cut out of it. A lot of complexity was cut out of it, but it was still an instant classic.
Yeah.
You know?
I can see that.
And maybe I hope that's what folks take away, is that, like, there really is a lot of room for big, like, single-player or, like, local multiplayer, right? That's going to be a big part of it. RPGs can succeed. You don't need the service game elements. You don't need a shitload of in-game, you know, monetization, right? That doesn't necessarily help you. In fact, it could hurt you. You know, make something weird and fun and engaging. Make something with a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like identity and purpose and trust in your developer's identity, you know, in their vision. So
yeah, it's just wild that, like, you know, so far I've got two Game of the Year candidates. It's Final Fantasy 16 and
I've got so many. I'm in trouble this year for sure.
You know, and the year's only half over. So the year's more than half over.
Yeah.
Which is wild to think about.
Yeah, you're in I don't know if you can read numbers, but it's SDGC Live 8/10/23. So we're well past that halfway point.
Yeah, and Derek, just think, we've still got another game coming out this month.
Son of a bitch, Armored Core. I forgot that was August.
It's like 2 weeks
shit.
Away. Dude. It's like,
and then
it's
after that, we've got
Armored Core game. Like, you're not
all
gonna
these
play that.
October games.
Spider-Man in September. The Spider-Man is weeks away.
Mortal Kombat's in September.
Mortal Kombat.
Fuck, man.
Fucking Super Mario RPG Remake, Star Ocean 2. There's also something I'm forgetting There's a big one I'm forgetting.
I need to quit my job.
Yeah, like that's the only way. The amount of games coming out is just fucking stupid. Finally, I guess so we filled like a whole ass over an hour with Baldur's Gate 3, and I could talk more about it, but there's a couple other things that we wanted to dig on here.
Maybe hold on to the Twisted Metal feels like the lightest conversation, and bring up later, especially Justin brought it up, and I think Justin has some things he wants to say about that. So like we can hold on to that for a future discussion about
actually just came out today here. It was delayed for some reason, so I might actually watch some of it and have some thoughts too if we wait a little bit.
If we want to do it this week, I'll watch an episode.
I haven't seen it, so it'd be worth watching to have some thoughts on.
There is one more thing about Baldur's Gate that I did want to bring up, and it's the thing about save scumming.
However the fuck they want, dude. I don't care.
So there's this big thing. It's like it's reignited the debate about saves coming. To me,
I don't think
never
that's true.
Debate. Like,
I think like, there's like, I think I haven't read that article.
Play the game how you fucking want.
Like, but I presume that it's yet another example of we found three people tweeting about a thing and projected it out.
So there are very prominent streamers who are doing streams of Baldur's Gate 3, and they're like, no save scums here. And it's like,
that
okay,
doesn't
great.
Mean anything like, to me, because prominent streamers used to mean people like PewDiePie. It means people like Dr. Disrespect. Like, prominent streamer actually just means noted local idiot with a lot of attention.
Spoken
as somebody who does up live podcast on Twitch.
There's
debate. I recognize.
There's no debate about saves coming. If you want to play the game without reloading a save, do it. If you want to save scum, do it. Don't let anybody fucking gatekeep how you play your games.
Not even about save scum. It's just like a game is a product that you buy. So if you buy a car and you want to pull it apart, do it. And you want to like put a stupid paint job on it, do it. Right? You buy a game, you want to mod the shit out of it, do it. Like you want to, you know, assuming you're not like impacting other people's experience, obviously, right? Like trolling them in like a multiplayer game. But like, if you want to like put in a god cheat and just fly around the world and like give yourself free money, who gives a shit?
Yeah,
like,
do as you will.
We should probably just ignore anyone who says otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. There was something else I wanted to hit on that's not Baldur's Gate 3 related, and that is... I can't believe we didn't bring this up in as possible topics on Discord, but it is notable that Bungie has tapped Keith David as the new voice of Commander Zavala, taking over for the unfortunately departed Lance Reddick. And Keith had a very, very cool and humble video that he put out about it. Honestly, like as somebody who fell off Destiny years and years ago and will almost certainly never go back, I'll say this, they could not have picked a better replacement there's no replacing Lance Reddick, but they could not
but somebody has, if you want to keep the character going, you need a new voice actor. Keith David's one of the best voice actors in fucking history. I mean, incredible actor, but also a class act, right? I've never heard a bad word about Keith David. So the man's dripping with charisma. He seems like a genuinely really good dude.
And he sounds like Lance Reddick. Like he's got a very, very similar tone.
He's got another very deep.
Perfect for Zavala.
He'll embody a similar space. And it's clear that he recognizes like the importance of stepping into that role and like what that means. You know, it's not the first time he's done something like that either. Stepping into the shoes of, you know, a character inhabited by a now past black actor, you know, so it means a lot.
I had an interesting wake up call earlier because I was, again, talking about it in our Discord, and the thought had entered my mind that, like, you know, Bungie might retire the character, whatever, we've seen movies do. But this is my very privileged North American white ass thinking, like, you know, it didn't enter my mind that this is a character that's, as our friend Dio pointed out, that's voiced in 10 other languages by 10 other voice actors. Many of whom are already like beloved in the way that Lance Reddick is for their respective audiences. Yeah. So like it would be extremely disrespectful. You know, again, nothing against Lance Reddick, but like to them to say that this one person and this one person only embodies the character.
That's a good point.
The character is what's important. And my belief is that most performers who care about the character in the story would fully support something like this and want that legacy to continue and want that story to continue to be told. And I think Lance absolutely, I think, would approve of Keith David.
You know, this is why, like, you know, I'll bring up Black Panther. Like, there was a lot of discourse about whether or not they should have recast T'Challa after Chadwick Boseman very unfortunately passed away, right? And I was always on the side of, you know, recast him because, you know, I loved what Chadwick Boseman did for that character, but the character, but he was not T'Challa.
I think I understand, though, why a lot of people in the moment, because what I saw, what I think I've seen from my perspective is a lot of people in the moment, right, were like, this has got to be the end. Right.
Sure.
And who, with the benefit of hindsight, years down the road have gone, we could probably recast this character. But yeah. I think it also, like, it just, for us, it's a comic book character, right? Like, for us stupid nerds who grew up reading, like, Fantastic Four.
But Jeff made a great point. Like, when he said, like, you know, these actors would want these characters recast. Chadwick Boseman's brother came out and said Chadwick wanted him recast.
Sure. That's all stuff in conversations after the fact, right? At the time, what happened is a huge group of people who, this is the one and only time they'd ever seen anything quite like that.
Yeah.
Right. A mm-hmm. mainstream modern superhero hitting with the best of them, you know, that looked and represented, you know, them and spoke to, like, you know, the painful history of colonialism and things like that, and showed a vision without that. Like, for me and you, Black Panther is a character from Fantastic Four comics originally. And for most of the world, Black Panther was Chadwick Boseman in a suit. You know, it's just, it's hard, you know, but yeah. I think that's a really good point. I actually really like you bringing that up, Jeff, of the idea that, like, this is a character voiced in so many regions by so many people. There's no one definitive. It's very, like, you know, America centric to be like, well, the guy who voiced him in America is dead, so the character should go, when this is a character who's, you know, does not wear anyone's face. You know, I think that is different. So that's a really interesting way to put it.
I viewed it as a chance. Like, I viewed
John.
Like,
how did you actually? You went off script with some shit where I was like, "Here we go." John's gonna bring up a topic we didn't fucking clear in advance, and you actually found something, stumbled ass first into something kind of deep.
I tend to do that, Derek.
Well, sure.
And now to loop the conversation back to Final Fantasy VI. The beautiful segue into Final Fantasy VI and the Phantom Train, really. Because I feel like the Phantom Train rolling through the
We have 12 minutes left. We don't have
really
time.
Just kind of, Derek, it kind of embodies the journey that we're all taking spiritually. Until one day life just suplexes you right off the tracks. And it's up to you to find your inner, you know, blitz and just kind of, you know, right the ship again.
Too fucking hard, bud.
What do we want to do last, Derek?
I'm just saying, Derek.
This'll be shorter, which maybe works, cause I don't know how much we have to say about this, but, so Final Fantasy 14 Fan Fest and Evo were both recently within the last couple of weeks. Evo was last weekend, and FanFest was like a week before that.
Yeah, something like
something like that. And in both cases, the events have ended up being kind of COVID super spreader events. Tons of people have come down with COVID from FanFest and from Evo. And, you know, there's been annoying discourse about, like, I think it becomes very easy for everyone to hyper focus on, like, one person who knew they had COVID but put a mask on and went anyway. And, like, that is like a horrible, like, if you know you're positive, stay the fuck home. If you even think you're sick, stay the fuck home, you know, but, like, you don't get these super spreader events out of one sick person.
I mean, you can for sure. I mean, you know, I mean, the one at GDC was from one person.
Yeah, I know where Derek's going. Just that we know exactly of. Where I'm going. Yeah.
Just that we know of, right? Like, I don't want to name names because it's not worth it, right? Obviously, like, it's not our place to get into this shit, even if I'm upset. But, like, the person who we know went to events outside GDC 22, and who got people sick with COVID because they knew they had COVID, like, that's the only person who admitted that they knew they had COVID. Right. But, and I got yelled at for saying this, but I was like, that was not the only COVID positive person who was there. That might not even be the only COVID positive person who knew they were positive. But, right. They're just the one that said something.
But I mean, so like, right. But like, you know, it's like, so, like, you know, sorry, but you know, you are the one that we know about. Like, you know, so you're going to take the heat, like, you know, you're going to take the brunt of the heat. I want to focus on something that was said in chat. Let me scroll up here real quick. Cons have always been super spreader events. Always. I get it.
You
right?
always like, get con crud.
The con
in the
crud,
years
right?
before like, COVID, but like, you
but
got.
Like, but you have like, you know, you know, or like, you know, oh, I got a cold or, but this time it involved a fucking virus that killed millions.
Well, that's, I don't think that comment was like, meant in terms of like to diminish it. I think that's more of like,
no,
understanding
not at all.
Like you should know that a con is a place where like, shit's gonna spread because that has always been how it has worked. It is always a disease hotspot,
right?
So
no, for
during
sure. no,
the
no,
age
no.
of COVID,
I wasn't disparaging the comment at all. What I want to say is that, like in the past, I probably would have gone to a con with a small cold, like, you know, because it's like, okay, whatever, it's a cold, I'll be fine, right? Brit,
hey,
Jesus Christ, Brit. I happen to look over in chat. I'm about to make a point. I don't know what the fuck my point was now, but
yeah.
God damn it.
Well, no, in the age of COVID, right? Like things that were already like spreader events, easy places to ease, like you, a place where you used to pick up the con crud is now a place where you pick up COVID, you know? And
yeah, I guess my point is like, people need to be more fucking careful now because now you got a virus out there that has responsible for millions of deaths worldwide.
Like, I both still want, and I know, FanFest at least did, and I think Evo also didn't require masks while you were there. And I think that that's a thing that, like, I still feel that events should be mandating masks at places that are going to have high attendance gatherings. But at the same time, like, a bunch of people crammed it. Like, I've seen photos of some of these cons.
Like, there's only so much those masks are going to do.
Yeah, not when you got that many people packed in that tight a space.
I mean, and that's, That's kind of like where my point was going to go is, you know, like most people who know me well know what, you know, a hard time I had with COVID. Like I would never diminish the disease. It's kind of like when, again, we talk about nuanced topics. Absolutely. These events could require masks. It would certainly be a good thing. I would be in support of it. But at the same time, if you go to an event like this, you have to, I'm going to Disneyland in September. I have an understanding that there is a decent likelihood that I will get sick being around that many people for a few days. That's a risk that I've accepted to take. I would still like for them to do what is in their power to mitigate that and protect me, but I share some of that responsibility. But, you know, as regards to like masking and mask policies, I'm not a, you know, a medical expert. This is all based on stuff my anxiety has driven me to read over the years because I became obsessed with this. Is that masking works, and it absolutely works, and it's very effective. It's been used in hospitals forever before people were convoying and protesting. It works when you mask properly. It works when you have, and especially with the new variants, cloth masks do nothing, surgical masks do nothing. You need a properly fitted N95 with no leakage above the nose, no leakage around the cheeks. It has to be secure to your face with no gaps.
None of this. I left some room at the sides of my nose. Yeah,
so you can breathe. It should not be hanging down below your nose. You should be washing your hands before you remove it and after you put it back on so that you don't contaminate it. So when that's not happening and you have no one policing that and you have everyone wearing a variety of quality masks, removing them to eat and drink completely ruins it. The mask should not come off. Removing it to hang out with friends in hotel rooms and events outside, going to restaurants outside the event, bringing it back in. It would help. I'm not convinced that it would have prevented these, especially since it sounds like there's a bit of COVID resurgence just going on in general. And I think it's coinciding because we have had a lot of big events. These are not the only two, and they are certainly not, at least here, nobody is requiring masks. And I think, I also feel a little bit for organizations who I think might want to, and it's unfortunate that our governments completely failed at controlling this years ago and still fail to, you know, deliver proper mask mandates. Because the thing a lot of businesses struggle with here is the vitriol and anger, and these low-paid employees working at these events don't want to deal with it. And it's easier to just not do it because The governments are downloading that responsibility to these organizations, being like, okay, you can do it if you want, but they know that since it's not a law, they're going to have a very hard time enforcing it. People don't like it, but when it comes from a higher authority, there's a lot more acceptance and understanding of that, and it gives a better position to the organization.
It takes the heat off of, like, yeah, the poor fucker wringing out groceries, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
because it's not their policy. Oh, it's federal law. There's nothing I can do. It's an easier sell. It's unfortunate all around, and I definitely, of course, there's no excuse to knowingly be positive. But, like, the other fact is, it sounds like here, testing kits are not going to be available within a year. You will literally not be able to know if the illness you have is COVID or not, which is, like, common sense. If you're sick, stay home. If you absolutely have to go out, wear a mask. But at the same time, like, understand that illness is out there, and unfortunately, COVID's a part of it now. And, like, I don't know. Like, they're just, I don't really know if there's a good solution is where I'm going with.
I think at this point, like, it's kind of like you brought up, we're kind of years past the solution. We needed to handle this right back in 2020. We needed to shut down for a couple of months and pay people to stay home, and we didn't. And as a result, like, Pandora's box was opened, and we have slowly over time, especially with the existence of vaccines, right, and, like, the way things have mutated, it does seem like the disease has slowly become slightly less deadly, right? It seems like obviously most of us have a higher general level of protection because of the vaccines, you know, and, like, the situation's better than it was 2-3 years ago. But at the same time, it's just become a fully endemic thing we'll probably never get rid of. So
we're going to have COVID season every year now.
We have to be, I think we owe it to be careful, right, to try and reduce the spread, just like we do with the flu, right? Although COVID is much more serious than the flu and has sometimes horrible long-term effects that the flu does not tend to give people. So major differences there. Yeah, exactly. Karnak brought it up right as I was talking about it, right? Long COVID's not a joke.
Yeah.
But, like, man, if you're going to go to a concert, if you're going to go to a big, like, gaming expo, something like this, you need to just accept that you're putting yourself at risk of getting sick.
Also, get the fucking vaccine.
Yeah, get the fucking vaccine, unless you have a genuine medical reason not to. But the number of people who genuinely have a medical reason not to is vanishingly slim. Yeah. So.
And I mean, that the Derek said what I was trying to say earlier, like, that's kind of where I was going with the, you know, the organizations can put in measures, but ultimately it's up to us. And unfortunately, yeah, I think I try really hard to be optimistic, but unfortunately, you know, I think society has shown a lot of their true colors in recent years. But that's all the more reason, like, you know, for those of us who do care to do our best, you know, no one's perfect. I often struggle with, like, are my allergies just really bad today? Like, do I cancel my entire week's itinerary because I got a little sniffle? It's hard, right? It's a gray area. It's different than, like, having a positive test kit in your hand and knowing you have COVID. But all we can do is the best and just use common sense and try to protect each other. And especially, like you said, like, most of us healthy individuals, the risk is greatly reduced compared to a few years ago. There are many people, for various reasons, that are immunocompromised that can't. And they do their best, but we should still feel an obligation to do our best to protect them, because it's not fair to ask them to not go to these conventions and stay home because they don't have a choice. It's between complete isolation or potential death. And so really, I think it's people at these kind of cons. It sucks. Like, you want to go there, but you got to do the right thing. Lives matter more than, you know, a game.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that, like, not getting COVID is a moral virtue and that, like, getting COVID is a moral failing, because it's not how this fucking works. But, like, it is August of 2023. We're 3.5 years past COVID, like, breaking out into the wild. Jesus. I've never caught it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been vaccinated. I wear masks in busy areas. I'm careful. Right. Yeah. And at the same time, I don't work from home. I go into work. I meet up with friends and family. Yeah. We got together for charity stuff, right?
And like you said, it's not to blame, like, say it's people.
I've flown
who
a couple of times.
It's just, like, proof. It's, I think, at least evidence that, like, you can at least mitigate it, right? I don't think it's pure luck that we haven't got it. I'm the same way. I'm very fortunate. I don't have kids bringing in disease from daycare or school. Again, not their right, fault. It's just the sure. reality. Like, as a parent, I think most people who I know who were first to catch it were parents, because mm-hmm. and I felt for them. It's like, what can I fucking do, right? Like, you can't. But you know, it's no coincidence that I think we take the measures and do, you know, common sense and reasonable and stay home when we're sick. And like you said, mask in crowded areas, and it helps. It does. And it yep. helps protect other people, not just yourself.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, that's just what it boils down to, is like, it this needs to not be about like judging people for whether or not mm-hmm. they've caught it or how many times they've caught mm-hmm. it. 'Cause you don't know, but like, we have actions we can take that will help reduce the chances of us getting it. If I don't get it, I can never spread it to anybody else. Right. And like, yeah. you know, we can really, really reduce. What was that during the pandemic when everyone was masking, the winter of 2020 into 2021 was like the lightest flu season ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the flu almost disappeared
for a year or two.
Yeah, because we just were fucking careful, right?
And guess what? Like, the flu kills a lot of people too. We saved a lot of fucking lives.
Everyone likes to say COVID's just the flu in like a way to minimize COVID, but like the flu is serious for a lot of younger, older, immunocompromised folks. Shape. Oh my god, that flu!
The only reason that the flu doesn't kill more people in the United States and Canada is because of our, you know, we have just a more developed health system than other parts of the world.
Yeah, we get flu shots, right? Like most people's workplaces, let you get a free flu shot. You know, even then, like I got the flu so fucking bad I was hallucinating. I gave it to a shitload of people by accident because I didn't know I was sick before I traveled. And then when I got home, I had fucking pneumonia, right? Like. Yeah. And like, pneumonia kills healthy people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. The flu doesn't kill you necessarily at my age and my health. But if you get pneumonia, that shit will kill you. It doesn't matter how many push-ups you can do.
Yeah, pneumonia can kill you. And as somebody who had COVID for a fucking Thanksgiving week of all weeks.
Oh, God, that's right.
But I was careful as fuck and I got it. And that shit was no joke. I woke up one night with a 103.2 degree fever. Almost hospital time for me. So we have reached the end of the show here. Looks like there's Luna, the only cat I like.
What about Zeke?
Zeke's fine.
Oh,
I'm only saying that because Justin's not here. So Derek, did you want to plug our Sunday activity?
Yeah, a couple things to plug. Obviously, if you're not there already, join the Discord. It's a good place, heavily moderated, safe place, fun place. You know, it's a good crew. Despite having over 400 members, it is a.
You believe our Discord has over 400 people?
It's a big place. I mean, now granted, not all of those people are. In fact, the majority of those people are not like regularly daily active or anything. But it's an active place. It's a good place. It is a safe place for marginalized folks. You know, queer, neurodivergent. You know, people of color, etc. You know,
plus
so
the whole
good spot.
Fantasy channel.
Yeah. So we can get that out of our fucking system. You can support us obviously with subs here on Twitch or by supporting us on Patreon. As always, all of our content will always be free, but, you know, it helps us to, you know, pay to get to cons and major events and get together and do charity stuff. So, you know, that's good stuff. You know, you should maybe consider it, but if you can't, that's fine. 'Cause things are hard right now. So
2 months till the charity stream.
That's why it's not a necessity. Yeah. We got the charity stream is late October. So we'll talk more about that as we get closer.
Jeffrington's going to be there.
I think the only person who's a maybe right now is Justin. So
yeah,
and I think we'll figure out how to get Justin. We got to figure.
We'll
it out.
We'll talk him into it.
I've got so many mystery flavor beans waiting for Jeff.
It's so good for him if he comes.
It is.
And then on Saturday, I think starting at 11 a.m. Eastern again, John and I will.
Is it Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday.
Okay.
Sunday is supposed to be my Castle Bravo day, but Finn has not gotten back to me. Saturday we will be doing the second part of our Mortal Kombat stream. I think we'll be doing the back half roughly of Mortal Kombat 9 story mode and you know, raising money for the Entertainment Community Fund. That's money that will help financially support struggling actors and writers while they're on strike right now. I just read that Billy Porter had to sell his home because of financial hardship. So like, you know, hey, it's fucking happening. Bob Iger wanted people to lose their homes. And, you know, so, oh yes, I know good and fucking well what part, especially given how obsessed John is with Sindel, although less so now because of Karlach. I know, new waifu.
I mean, that's my only question, Derek.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that'll be happening. It's going to be a good time. Yeah.
Wait, does she?
No, the stream will be happening and we'll be raising money for charity. So
No. In chat, I said Sindel disrobes as a joke and Josh said, yup, but he wasn't talking about
it. He was referring to something I was mentioning.
Yeah, I also thought it was yup though. And I was like, Derek, let's do Mortal Kombat tonight.
No.
Like, No. Karlach is where it's at. Like, Derek, Josh knows.
I'm going to make a Mortal Kombat fan out of John. It's going to happen, weirdly. We're getting there, man. Dude, you're going to be kind of into it with 9, but when we hit Mortal Kombat X, you're going to get weirdly into it. I know. So, anyway.
I don't know.
We'll find out on Saturday.
All right. Let's cut it off here, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. We will see you next week. And remember, kindness costs nothing.